Welcome to The Impact Project, the best podcast for young millennials to learn about and get involved in the business of sustainability, impact investing, and all things for purpose. My name is Ray, and today I'm excited to be joined by Richard Vine. Richard is the founder of Biopack, and in this episode, we hear firsthand from Richard his experience founding a for-purpose business and the role Biopack is playing in disrupting the packaging industry to help drive a better, more sustainable future. We also take a deep dive into how we can use the principles of the circular economy to help solve a lot of the environmental issues we face today and how young changemakers can get involved in making a difference.
Well, welcome to the show, Richard. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've been super excited to have this chance to sit down with you. I guess as someone who eats out a lot and gets takeaway a lot as well,
yeah.
I think packaging is something that I never really realized just how much of a, I guess, wastage print I have as an individual just through my everyday actions, such as eating out or ordering that Uber Eats dinner or that lunch from work. And I think for a lot of us out there, it's just we don't stop and think just how much waste each of us creates, and it all adds up, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why I was super excited to get the chance to sit down with you and hear about all the incredible things that you're doing here at Biopack in helping to solve that issue and, I guess, helping get society to where it needs to be. But before we dive into it, I thought it'd be great just to hear a bit about yourself, your journey, and how you got to where you are today.
Okay, brilliant. I'll try and keep it brief. For me, I guess I've been in plastics my entire life. My father had plastic business in the 70s and one of the early adopters. And so I've always loved plastic and known a lot about it. I guess plastic hasn't got a great rap these days. And anyway, it's something that I'm hoping to address. So having grown up around plastic and then being in South Africa, finally coming to Australia and sort of being exposed to all the beautiful beaches that we have in this country, One of the things that I was really noticed was these little pieces of plastic. I'm so attuned to everything plastic that the first thing I noticed on the beaches was all these little plastic fragments. And a little while later, this run about 2005, I'd read a book called Cradle to Cradle, which is about the circular economy and the next industrial revolution of how we make things and remake things again. Incidentally, at the same time, there was an article in the Waverley paper about a company that had been fined for supplying polystyrene packaging for their juices. And I saw this, and having read the book, I sort of got me thinking, I'm sure we can solve this problem. I'm sure that there's an opportunity here to make something a bit more sustainable. And I guess that's where my journey began into bioplastics. And I founded Biopack pretty soon after that in 2006 to solve the issue of single-use plastic pollution, not only in Australia, but hopefully on a global scale.
And I guess on that point, it'd be great to hear a little bit about Biopack itself and so what you guys do.
Yep. So it was interesting. In the early days, you know, I kind of adopted a whole lot of different products, trying to see what would stick. We had everything from plant-based cleaning chemicals to films to raw material. And in the early days, 2006, I managed to get the Agency for a Number of Bioplastic Materials out of Europe. And I brought some into the country and started approaching a lot of the manufacturing companies in Australia, trying to get them to adopt this bioplastic. But in 2006, there was not the awareness that we have today about the environmental impact of plastics. It would take probably another 11 years, War on Waste and David Attenborough to really bring the issue of plastic pollution into focus for the general public. So, you know, in the early days, it was really difficult. And so the business evolved. Eventually, we started doing sort of food packaging. I think the moment where we sort of started really gaining traction was when we started bringing in a compostable coffee cup. In 2006-07, the coffee market in Australia was very crowded, a lot of competition. And by adopting a cup that had a sustainability angle was a way for businesses to differentiate themselves in a crowded marketplace. My business partner and myself, we went door knocking. He would drive and I would run in with a sample box. And we were really trying to get people to adopt this new material. There was zero awareness about what compostable packaging was, what plant-based bioplastics was. And as I said, this was an easy way to sort of you know, get our foot into the market, and it all grew quite rapidly from there.
So I guess at the start, was it almost knocking door to door in single cafes and talking to the owners and getting them to convince, giving them the elevator pitch on why it's better?
Very much so. We had a box, and it had a sticker on the outside of the box that said, "How can corn improve your coffee?" Think outside the box, open up the box and find out more. And inside was the cup and explanation of this plant-based bioplastics. So yeah, it was...
I imagine initially, was there some skepticism from I guess, the people you were pitching to? Were there doubts, or was people generally quite open-minded to this sort of thing?
I think there's always skepticism. Even today, as the industry has evolved, there's still skeptical people out there. And I think it's good to have a healthy dose of skepticism when looking at new products. It's really important to, you know, to really understand the entire supply chain, understand all the components before making a decision to switch. And that's the same is true today. I mean, this industry is evolving very rapidly. Bioplastic has probably been commercially available for the last decade, and there's more and more demand coming for more sustainable alternatives to conventional plastics. And there's a lot of greenwashing. So there's a lot of companies that are trying to, you know, maintain the status quo or do things on the cheap. And sometimes cheap isn't always environmentally friendly. And so there is a lot of greenwashing and misinformation out there. It's very confusing for the average consumer to really, you know, identify the truth. And for me, it's really important. I think early on, I took inspiration from the likes of Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's when forming BioPack. It wasn't just about, oh, I'm going to start this company in order to make money. The whole motive behind it was to really change the world and to do things on the scale like Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's were these B Corps, you know, the first companies to really sort of have profit, you know, as the last place. It was people, planet first, and then profit. And it's very much the philosophy of the company today. You know, it's all about how do we create a better world?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because if you look at the success of Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's, is that they've managed to almost, going back to that concept of maybe the triple bottom line, is that they've managed to both make a positive impact and make a profit. I think, I'm not sure from your perspective, but my understanding was if you go back 10, 20 years, there was always that perception that, I guess, trying to make a social impact would come at the cost of profit. And I'm curious to get your perspective on that, I guess, through BioPack, if you found that that's very much not the case.
No, I think that it's imperative for companies today to be socially responsible. And I think that without having a social responsibility initiative within the organization, I think you're ultimately doomed for failure. There's so much more information accessible to consumers, and there's so much more transparency today that, and consumers are demanding that, you know, that companies do the right thing. I think if anything, it can give you a competitive advantage in specifically in industries that are slow to evolve and change. So, and there's a lot that needs to be changed in the current linear model that we operate in. There's a lot of opportunities to improve and make things better.
I mean, it's interesting because I guess as a coffee drinker myself, you know, if I go back even 5-6 years, a lot of it wasn't compostable. And so, but nowadays I've noticed so much more and more, it's all BioPack branded compostable cups, which just goes to show how much adoption has increased over just the past few years. But I guess maybe taking a step back, it'd be good to understand from your perspective what exactly differentiates bioplastics from, say, your traditional coffee cup plastic for, I guess, the listeners out there who aren't so familiar with what actually specifically makes it different and what makes it better for the environment.
Sure. Let me start off, first of all, by saying that coffee cups are probably the poster child for everything that's wrong in the food service industry. And whilst they're probably the most recognizable and most talked about issue when it comes to sustainability or excessive consumption, they really account for a very small percentage of the waste generated by the food service industry. You know, coffee cups in Australia, the numbers are staggering, 1.6 billion. There's no talk about cold paper cups, which is probably another 1.6 billion. It represents about 12,000 tons of material. The food service industry actually, we estimate, consumes about 130,000 tons of single-use food service packaging materials. And that translates to about 17 billion single individual-use items, which is like 500 units for every Australian citizen. So there's significant impact. And I guess when it comes to coffee cups specifically. Historically, coffee cups are lined with a plastic, a polyethylene plastic, to provide waterproof a coating for the paper, so it doesn't absorb into the paperboard, and also to construct the cup. So when the cups are made, that seam along the edge there, it's actually heat sealed and melted, and the plastic helps that functionality by melting and creating that seam. So the difference between our cups and the traditional polyethylene coated cups is that our coating is made from a plant-based material called PLA. They derive it from cornstarch and tapioca starch, and it is fermented to create lactic acid, and then this is turned into a polymer. Mm-hmm. The beautiful thing about this material is that it has multiple end-of-life options. So it can be mechanically recycled, can be chemically recycled, can be incinerated, and can be composted. Now, composting really makes sense specifically in the food service industry context, because food service packaging contaminated with organic residue or food residue is problematic. It can contaminate an entire batch of clean, recyclable materials. If you think about it, you know, a coffee cup with any coffee residue in it, that added to a clean paper stream will make the rest of the paper quite soggy and unpleasant and cause bacteria and smells and odors. So it just doesn't make sense to have a cup that is recyclable, because it doesn't address the rest of the, first of all, it doesn't address the rest of the issues in the industry, and it's just not practical and economically viable to process it. Look, and with this said, I think, you know, ultimately we should always try and reuse wherever possible. And there's going to be a certainly a big push to the reuse model. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies that are coming to market with different reuse models, and a lot of bans in certain cities where they're actually banning single-use disposables completely in favor of reusables. But it will not solve the problem completely. I think there'll always be a need for single-use disposable food service packaging for serving food and beverages to large portion of the population on the go. Think natural disasters. How do you know, reusables are not going to fit in there. So whilst I think we could probably reduce the amount of single-use disposables excess, you know, by maybe 40-60%, there will still be a certain percentage that's required. Back to the coffee cups again. It's interesting to see there's different models coming out at the moment. So historically, first cups were wax coated. Then it was polyethylene coated. Then we had this plant-based compostable material. Now we have a new generation of, they call it aqueous coated material, which they claim is plastic free. I did some research into this. It's not 100% plastic free, but again, they're trying to adapt and I think address consumer concerns and pushbacks and, you know, that awareness about plastic pollution. So compostable materials are so much better than conventional fossil based plastics, and the fact that they're made from rapidly renewable resources, they have a lower carbon footprint, and they will biodegrade more rapidly than conventional fossil-based plastics if they do enter the environment. And I think this is also where there's a potential concerns about bioplastics. If you'll probably see recently there's been an announcement of bans across different states in the country banning certain items. Mm. Some states have included certain bioplastic items in that ban, for example, cutlery. They are banning plastic cutlery, including bioplastic cutlery, because by the nature, these are the items that are generally found most littered or ending up in the ocean. And so a plant-based compostable bioplastic that ends up in the ocean will take a significant period of time to biodegrade. In a compost environment, it will biodegrade within 3 months, leaving behind no toxic residues. But in the ocean, it's a different story. So wherever there are alternatives that are, I guess, more biocompatible, materials that are, I guess, more in sync with the natural environment, materials that will biodegrade in the natural environment, that's the first choice. So there are alternatives for the cutlery. There's obviously wood-based cutlery for straws. There's paper-based straws and the likes. Yeah. But coffee cups, you know, as I say, is the poster child for the bigger problem of the industry.
Yeah. And I think it's would you almost say that BioPack's trying to resolve that single-use packaging issue of recycling and creating renewable packaging to solve that issue?
I think really what our mission is to try and help the food service industry adapt to a circular economy model. Mm-hmm. And now the food service industry, one of the biggest waste streams generated by that industry is organic waste, as you could well imagine. I think it's in the region of about 350,000 tons per year is what we estimate. And so basically, if you look at the biggest waste stream, you want to have packaging and materials that are compatible with that biggest waste stream. You don't want to have to go in and explain to the consumer, hey, put that packaging in this bin or that recycling bin and then your food into that bin. The beautiful thing about compostable packaging is that everything goes into one bin. So really what we're working on now, and this is something that was a challenge from the very beginning, obviously in 2006, we were very much focused on eliminating conventional plastics and providing these more sustainable bioplastics. But we get to the point now where, you know, 12, 13 years later, we've got this fantastic array of materials that are rapidly renewable, but we don't have the end of life options in the country. Lack of composting. Well, there's not a lack of composting infrastructure. If anything, there's a lack of collection infrastructure for the materials. So we just recently launched a Compost Connect initiative, which is an industry platform that is the beginning of an extended producer responsibility scheme for the food service industry and the food service packaging industry. Really what we're trying to do is get everyone to come on board and help solve that issue of the collections. So we're connecting the waste management industry, the composting industry, and the food service industry, so we can actually solve this end-of-life issue and divert not only the 130,000 tons of packaging waste, but the 350,000 tons of organic waste, which currently ends up in a landfill. Organic waste in landfill rots and emits methane gas, which is a greenhouse gas more potent than carbon dioxide. So it's very much aligned to local government and federal government mandates of net zero to landfill and, you know, that circular economy model of making sure that things are diverted from landfill and just reused as long as possible.
Yeah, it's almost like providing an end-to-end solution then in that way, right?
Very much so. It's so important. And again, you know, having a look at the likes of Patagonia, it's really taking responsibility for the things that we put into the market. And the companies that benefit or the individuals that benefit from the use of these products should be responsible or partly responsible for ensuring that they are recovered. And that we really feel that passionate about that point. And this Compost Connect is an evolution because in 2017, we launched the Compost Club, which was exclusively to BioPack. Right. And a year later, you know, we'd expanded the service from just being in Sydney to nationwide. We probably had about 300 customers on board, diverted about 2,000 tons of organic waste from landfill. But it became quite evident that in order to really scale and make an impact, we had to be more inclusive and get everyone on board. And this is what the idea of the Compost Connect initiative came about, is let's get a platform where we can get everyone on board and all contribute to that. The only way we can make any meaningful change is through collaboration and taking on a systemic approach or systematic approach to this, not looking at individual items, but looking at the entire industry and getting all participants within an industry to adapt, because the materials don't solve the problem.
Yeah.
Everything else with that system needs to adapt and evolve if we need to make any progress.
I guess you need all parts of that process to work, right? Otherwise, if a single part of it falls out, then...
Correct. And this is the challenge we have today, because a lot of pushback is, oh, well, there's no composting infrastructure, or, you know, there is composting infrastructure, we just can't get it there. And how do we do that? And as one of the beneficiaries of this industry, I think it's up to us to help fund the composting and waste management industry to overcome the obstacles of collecting more of this waste.
And I guess almost disrupt a rather traditional industry in that sense.
Very much so.
I think going back to a term you've used a lot so far is the circular economy. So I'm really curious to get your perspective on how you would define what the circular economy actually is and where you think, I guess, packaging... What role packaging plays in supporting that whole concept?
Okay. So for me, it's quite simple. Circular economy is about retaining the value of resources for as long as possible in cascading loops. Mm-hmm. And it's also split up into two different types of material streams. We have biological materials and technical materials. So biological is everything that they produce, and technical is everything that's man-made. Mm-hmm. And it's really important not to mix the two together, because as soon as you mix biological and technical together, it's difficult to separate and difficult to recover and recycle. And this is why, again, if I go back to what we're doing, everything that we have is bio-based. There is no plastic, conventional plastic in our products. They're all bio-based and are compatible with that waste stream. So that to me is the circular economy. And when we look at applying that to packaging, specifically for the food service industry, so as I mentioned, the food service industry, the largest waste stream is organic waste. What do? They serve food to nourish people on the go. By recovering the organic waste and the packaging waste, returning that back into a compost, returning that compost back into the soil to return nutrients back into the soil again to grow more food, that is a circular economy example.
Right.
And that's where we see these things fitting in, where you continue to use and regenerate. And even if you're taking a more simplistic approach, our materials are generated from plants. And when they are finished at the end of their life, they return the nutrients back into the system again to grow more plants.
That makes sense. So just the cycle just continues, correct, right? And then it's almost that there's no waste falling out of that cycle, right?
Correct. Just retaining those resources in use as long as possible in these cascading loops.
Yeah, and I'm curious, do you have a goal or an expectation for when, say, things like plastics will get phased out of, for example, single-use packaging? Or is that a little too early stage?
No, I mean, I think it's a great question. And I think, you know, when I started BioPack, I was quite naive and optimistic. And I'm thinking, you know, I can definitely disrupt an industry. It took a long time, and it took more than just BioPack out there. As I said to you before, it's these documentaries, you know, Craig Rucastle's War on Waste, David Attenborough's The Blue Planet, a picture of a turtle with a straw being removed from its nose. Those images were instrumental in shifting the conversation and the focus around it, and that really made a significant difference. So I would love plastics to be phased out, you know, as soon as possible. The Australian government has got sort of targets 2025 where all packaging must be reusable, recyclable, compostable. So I'm hoping that a lot of the problematic plastics that we have in the market today will be phased out by 2025, and that everything that we do use is recovered and recycled, either organically or mechanically.
And I guess going off that point, I'm curious to get your perspective on what you think are some of the key, I guess, headwinds and tailwinds in terms of supporting Australia in getting to that net zero goal.
If I look at just my specific niche in the food service industry, so one of the things that we first need to do is we need to harmonize the materials used within that system. That means all the food service industry, everything that's consumed or used in that system must be compostable. Until we have that situation, we're always going to struggle with contamination, and there's always going to be this pushback with consumer education, and that's problematic. And even today, you have these bespoke cup recycling systems with 7-Eleven and a number of other organizations that are rolling them out. I think that doesn't solve the problem. It, as I say, it only addresses 12,000 tons of the 130,000 tons of material, and that's just a distraction and delay. We need these companies, instead of putting money into those systems for dealing with one waste stream, is to put that money into helping to solve this other issue of reducing these unnecessary and problematic plastic materials in the system.
And I guess a common topic that comes up in conversations around sustainability is the role that the government plays in all of this. And not wanting to get political or anything, but what do you think that the government could do more to sort of support and drive forward a lot of what we just talked about? I think you mentioned, for example, not having the composting infrastructure there in place, where Australia sits in all of this versus, say, for example, governments from other countries around the world as well.
I think that Australian government is doing a really good job. Finally, we've had sort of policy, and that's super important. If we want to make any change, significant change in a shorter period of time, government policy is imperative. Because if you leave it up to industry to make the choice, they'll always go for that least cost. And plastic's always least cost. So until you mandate it, you're going to have a problem. Since these bans have come into place and these targets for 2025, it's really helped shift the whole conversation. And, you know, the Australian Packaging Covenant, which is an organization, a voluntary organization, which is like a packaging stewardship approach, has been very instrumental in defining the roadmap to achieve those 2025 goals. How does Australia compare to other countries? We're not bad. We're fairly progressive. I think, you know, sort of look at European countries tend to be a little bit more advanced when it comes to waste management and recycling. But, I think we're doing a really, really good job, and policy is critical. The bans are critical, and hopefully that'll help shift the needle and move it a bit quicker.
And I guess looking at the other side of the equation, would you say that consumer awareness has come a long way since you founded BioPack?
Most definitely. And I think consumer awareness, government policy, but technology also can play a very big role in shifting the way that we consume and how we handle resources. I'm working on some really interesting projects now. Again, there's that pushback on, you know, educating the consumer. Just recently, the government now has mandated that recycling bins across the country will all be the same color codes,
which is great.
Again, it makes so much sense. We have a relatively small population when you compare on a global scale. You know, it's a lot easier to educate, but technology can solve that problem as well. There are smart bins with artificial intelligence coming to market now that can automatically sort the waste at point of disposal, taking that whole decision-making process away from the consumer. There's apps like RecycleMate for the average home consumer where you can scan, you know, an item. If you don't know which bin it goes into, just scan it. It's geolocation-based data and it'll tell you exactly which bin it can go into or where you can take it to get recycled. So technology will go a long way to solving these issues as well.
Right, I had no idea that that app existed. So I think first thing I'll do when I go home is to actually try
it
out.
Yes.
No, I'm really good because even at work, there are so many instances where, you know, I'm eating or I have some food waste or whatever it is. And we have we have five different colored bins and I just don't know where to put it.
And that's the case with most people. It's so confusing. I mean, I've been in the industry my entire life. I know exactly which plastics can be recycled and which can't. But I understand the confusion for the average consumer. You know, a clear plastic made out of polycarbonate versus a clear plastic made out of PET. They look the same.
They're
both recyclable, but they're not compatible and not both recyclable.
There's little numbers in that triangle, which is I never fully understood the.
And even just limiting the number of materials or plastics that are used within a specific system can go a long way to ensuring cleaner waste streams and recovery. Also, the technology around plastic recovery and recycling is coming along quite rapidly. There's a lot of talk about chemical recycling, where they can take mixed waste plastic and, you know, chemically convert it back into the building blocks for more plastic. It's a significant challenge. We've got, you know, 380 million tons of plastic produced annually, growing exponentially. In the last 15 years, since I started BioPack, there's been more plastic produced in those 15 years than the entire previous 20th century. So it's accelerating exponentially. I'm concerned about the amount of investments in new production capacities for plastics in conjunction with the low recycling rates of 9% globally of plastic. So there needs to be government policy and legislation. We need to stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry, you know, and making their products so cheap, because whilst they're cheap from a commercial perspective, from an environmental, they're significantly expensive and damaging. So
it's the negative externalities that come from those.
Very much so. And just decoupling, you know, economic growth from fossil carbon is imperative. Unfortunately, Australia's not so good in that.
That aspect of things is, I guess, we've always struggled a bit with that.
Yep, and I think there's a lot of lobbying and a lot of misinformation being sort of put into the market from the plastics oil industry itself. They're notoriously famous for doing these types of things, and even challenging, you know, the claims of compostable packaging. There's a lot of compostable packaging seems to be held up to a much higher standard than any other material currently on the market.
Right.
They'll often make the claim, well, there's no infrastructure to recover the packaging. There, in fact, is the infrastructure, but they say there isn't. But the same could be said true for regular plastic packaging. There isn't infrastructure to process that locally either.
Yeah.
Yet we continue to use it, and we invest in more infrastructure. So the government is also supporting that by funding or subsidizing or co-funding or giving grants to companies that are able to recover and recycle these materials.
Right, because at the end of the day, going back to your point about that end-to-end solution is making sure you have all those pieces in place to support a circular economy, right?
Very much so, yes. Everything has to adjust and adapt. You can't just change your material and hope for the best.
The rest of it will solve itself, right?
Correct. And I mean, I think a lot of this awareness and this changing consumer behavior, attitude, and even government intervention is also a result of the China national sword. You know, for so long, Australians and the world were unaware. Everything was shipped off to China. It was out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And then when they came down in 2017, suddenly everyone woke up to this massive piles of waste everywhere that didn't know what to do with. And so there's a lot of money being sort of channeled into infrastructure. And I think that'll also go a long way to solving a lot of the legacy issues. And then cleaning up the ocean. I mean, you know, they say that 8 million tons of plastic enters the ocean every year. That's one dump truck every minute. And there's amazing innovations happening in actually stopping that flow into the oceans in the first place and actually cleaning up the plastic that's already there. So by no means are we anywhere close. There's a long way to go, but at least, you know, you can see some light at the end of the tunnel. I think that humanity has always been faced with these existential threats. And ultimately, I have utmost faith and belief that we will overcome this.
One way or another.
Correct, yes.
And going off your point, I think it's incredible to see all the different startups and companies that have come out in the past recent years trying to solve a lot of these sustainability issues, whether it's cleaning the oceans or like Biopack in the packaging industry.
Yep.
And so I think it's just incredible to see all the different ways that people are trying to innovate and make, you know, use of investors' money and all the different technologies we have available to, you know, make a difference in their own little niche.
That's really important because there's so much doom and gloom. If you look at the media, they're only focused on the negativity and the drama and the problems of the world. And I'm glad to hear that you see that too, because I feel that I'm in a very fortunate position to be exposed to a lot of the amazing innovators and entrepreneurs that are bringing incredible innovations to markets. Mm. I think that, you know, technology will solve all of these issues. I see a future. If you even have a look at 3D printing, for example, mm-hmm. how rapidly that's evolving and how quickly the cost is declining,
yeah.
I think that there will be a future in a not too distant future where you won't have single-use packaging manufactured at a large central facility in some overseas country, shipped, you know, with a container ship over land and sea and whatever. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, what will happen is you'll go into a cafe, you forget to bring your reusable cup with you, they'll have a 3D printer on the counter, you'll press a button, and a 3D printed cup will appear out of a liquid or whatever the case may be, and when you finish with that, it'll return back into that liquid again. That is the future, and I think that, you know, you need to sort of not look at the current way we do things and look at all the technological advances in quantum computing and 3D printing, that there's major disruption on the horizon when it comes to the way we're doing things. The status quo will not remain.
I think it's amazing. Just gets me excited to see where things will go from here.
Yes.
It's definitely an exciting time to be involved in the space,
it's
right?
It's incredibly exciting. And the packaging industry is so ripe for change, and there's so much happening in raw materials out of different feedstocks, out of sewage, out of blood, out of chicken feathers, out of methane, out of carbon dioxide. So mushroom packaging, this incredible amount of innovations coming to market that will solve this issue of our reliance on fossil-based resources that are just polluting the planet.
I just think it goes to show how innovative we can be when we try.
Exactly.
And when we actually find the incentive to do something about it, right?
Necessity is the mother of all invention.
Yes,
very much so.
It's the most realistic quote ever, right?
Yes.
I guess off that point, I would love to hear, I guess, what are your ambitions or what would you like to see happen over the next decade or so, whether that's in relation to Biopack, but also personally and from a sustainability perspective? What would you like to see change going forward?
I think for me, one of my goals to achieve through, you know, Biopack and the industry as a whole is I would like to see the entire food service industry adopt compostable packaging. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see all the packaging and food waste recovered, recycled, and returned back into the system. For me, that is the ultimate validation of what I set out to do and achieve that. You know, that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. We seem to be really, really close. Everything sort of is falling into place. And it only took 10 years. So, you know, overnight success is real. And I think a decade goes by so quickly. If you think about, you know, in 2010, the iPhone came out. Can we imagine a world now without a smartphone?
Exactly.
So I think that in the next decade, and interestingly, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals say we have another 10 years to really solve some of these existential threats. Otherwise, we're in big trouble. And I think that we cannot even comprehend the amount of innovation that will happen in the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
As just as we couldn't comprehend how the iPhone would have changed our lives, you know, back in 2010, I think the same is true now. And with the advances of quantum computing, material sciences, everything will just scale up and, you know, existentially just go off the charts when it comes to innovations.
Mm, it's almost that we're building the foundations now, and then once we have that there,
yeah,
the sky's the limit.
Interesting. I was watching an interesting documentary the other day, and it talks about how things are broken up into these cycles and you know, 20-year cycles. And so I'm the generation that is fixing the previous generation's past, and the generation that's to come are going to be the ones that are going to enjoy the fruits of what we've achieved, and we'll obviously face their own challenges. But I think that, you know, my mission is to really right the wrongs that have been, you know, done on the previous watch, on the previous generation's watch, and hopefully solve a lot of these issues.
And then set up the next generation for hopefully
exactly.
A better future.
And if you look back historically, you know, it's littered with stories of this. In the early Industrial Revolution, in England, the rivers were polluted. They were burning coal in open pit. There was lead pollution in the water. It's all being cleaned up since then. And so we'll solve this one too.
There's always a way, right?
There's always a way.
Now, I'm curious, throughout your career, has there been anyone or people that you've really looked up to and that you've, I guess, have been role models or have helped to inspire you, whether that's in the industry or out of the industry?
Yeah, the likes of Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, those business models inspired me. The people that wrote the book Cradle to Cradle, Brungart, fantastic role models or aspirational leaders, I think. There's so many incredible people out there. Ellen MacArthur Foundation, the amazing work that they're doing and that she initiated.
I'm curious to see what advice would you have, which I assume, I guess, for me as well, you're a role model for many, many of us, millennials out there who are sort of trying to figure their way, their path forward and how they can make a positive impact through their own paths and channels and I guess, careers. I'm curious to get your perspective on what advice you would give to people out there who are just starting off and wanting to make a difference and to make the change that they want to see.
I think that it just takes one person to change the world. Literally one idea, one person, can change the world. And I think that embrace failure. Don't be afraid of failing. I mean, I failed numerous times in my journey of BioPack to get to where we are today. It wasn't just that I started BioPack and suddenly had a business.
Overnight, it was just...
Yeah, there was a lot of stress and failure along the way. But I think if you're passionate and you have perseverance and are optimistic and embrace failure, you will succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's so much opportunity today to challenge the status quo, to make the world a better place. And I think it's important to have that, the motivation behind what it is that you're doing. I wouldn't say don't be motivated by money, by financial gain. Yeah. Rather be motivated by positive change. And I think that the financial gain will come once you could do something positive for the world.
Mm. It's always about the why, right?
Correct.
And I guess there's always more problems out there to solve.
There's more problems to solve. There are so many problems to solve. It's just amazing how many opportunities are out there.
Mm. Well, look, just before we wrap up the interview, I thought it'd be great to get maybe a couple of recommendations from you in terms of books or things you like to read or resources. And I know you mentioned Cradle to Cradle.
Cradle to Cradle. There's actually a new book that they've put out, a version 2 of that one, Remaking the Way We Make Things. I'm not quite sure the name of it. I'm so focused on reading industry news at the moment that I have very little time to really sit down and absorb a book.
But it's an investment.
Yes. With that said, though, I think, just look out for inspirational companies and their stories and try and replicate that.
Mm. Well, I guess to wrap up the interview, would you say if you could describe your experience so far in I guess, getting to where you are today with BioPack in one word, what would it be?
Roller coaster.
I guess that's a good way of putting it, right?
Yeah, but ultimately it's been an incredibly exhilarating ride, and it's fantastic. And there always will be in any career, in any business, there's going to be ups and downs. Enjoy the ride.
And I guess when you look back, it makes it so much better, right?
Most definitely.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Richard, for your time today.
Thanks, Robert.
I think it's been a really insightful conversation, and I got a lot out of it. So I really appreciate the time, and thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you learned something new and enjoyed the episode as much as I did. While you're here, feel free to follow the podcast on social media at our Instagram account, The Impact Project.